Ahoy, matey, and welcome to episode 55 of the Blue Cup Tours podcast. I'm Redbeard, also known as Grunislav, and with me as always...
Yarr!
That's the most unenthusiastic yarr I ever heard. Go back on your combine, Harvester.
Okay, I will.
Yes, I am.
Hello.
Hello.
I am Ben 304 Beard. how are you, Grunders Beard?
I'm alright. Today for me and for you for the next 14 minutes is Talk Like a Pirate Day, though you astutely pointed out that this podcast will be released the day after, so
that'll be enough of that. Yeah, but we've never really turned up an opportunity to have a bit of fun.
No.
To engage in funning.
I saw someone tweeting that if you dressed up and talked like a pirate and went into Krispy Kreme, you got a dozen donuts for free.
Well, if you went into Krispy Kreme as a pirate and just, like, pillaged the place, like, set it to flame and, like, you know.
Well, I mean, I think that's a bit extreme, but...
Everybody as prisoners and sell them into slavery later. Sure, well, you get free? I suppose you get free Krispy Kremes then too.
True. You get all the free Krispy Kremes. So yes.
Hang on, my cat wants to jump on my laptop.
Oh, okay.
We've got an emergency situation here.
Another one?
what are you doing?
I'm sick of all these emergency situations. For a little bit behind the scenes info, while Ben is dealing with that, this is actually our second take of the podcast because we started recording and 15 minutes in, my laptop decided that it was time to install some updates without any prompting. So
Microsoft Windows team, I know you're listening. What is with that?
I don't know.
What's this?
Yeah, I don't even. What were we talking about that was lost forever to the annals?
Okay, well,
of time?
Let's talk about what flight you've booked. What you'll be doing?
Oh yeah. Okay. Well, let me do that again. So yes, I booked a flight to London in December for Adventure X. And if you don't know what Adventure X is, it is a conference / expo. Of just adventure games and related. Adventure
it
game.
It sure
things.
Is.
Yeah, it's organized by Mark Lovegrove of Screen 7, and this is the fourth year. It will be my first year attending. I'm very excited about it. Dave Gilbert has attended in the past. They've had notable speakers like Charles Cecil and John Ingold and Chris Jones himself 1 year. And I'm going to be showing off a Golden Wake, and I'm going to exclusively be revealing the title and some gameplay from our project, which I have lovingly been referring to as the Scottish game.
An adventure exclusive, as you posted on the AGS forums.
Yes, an adventure exclusive, as my punny self is wont to do.
You witty fiend.
I am such a witty fiend. It makes me
sick.
I vomit daily.
Me, everyone else too.
Well, good. I'm glad we all share in the sentiment. So anyway, if you're listening and you want to,
if you're
come,
on the fence,
yeah, if you're on the fence, as you said before, mm-hmm. and you either find this prospect intriguing enough to go, or it's the deal breaker, and you're like, no, screw it, I don't want to see that guy. Oh yeah, I also plan on giving a talk, which I haven't submitted the title for yet or the subject. But if you've listened to the podcast, you probably will be familiar. I may or may not be ranting about a certain developer who we always talk about on this podcast.
Okay.
So maybe
that's acceptable.
Yeah, maybe I'll call it Caged In, How Not to Write Dialogue.
Yeah, interesting.
That would be terrible. Anyway, if you're listening and
if you like the podcast,
yeah, and you want to come,
if you like the podcast and you want to see it live, this will basically be like Hall & Oates, except just Hall.
Just Hall, yeah. It'll be at Daryl's house.
Because I'm clearly John Oates.
Well, I'm more Oates because I'm shorter, but you look more like Oates because you're darker skin and you have hair and you could grow a mustache better. And I'm pale and not blonde.
I
bet you if we both didn't get sun for a long time, I would probably be darker than you.
Probably. Probably. Although I am fairly Greek.
Yeah, so there's that.
But yeah, if you want to see Blue Cup Tool, the podcast.
Or just,
you know,
Blue Cup, the podcast live.
I like Blue Cup Tool just by itself.
Oh, okay.
Just one.
Yeah, just one of the tools.
So come on down
to Adventure X, December 6th and 7th.
Do you know pricing information?
It's free to attend. You just have to take care of your own way of getting to London and your own accommodation. But the event itself is free to attend, as far as I know.
There you go. So, what an incentive.
Indeed. So, yeah, there's that. Okay, so let's move on to what else we were talking about, which is what we've been playing. What have you been playing?
Yeah. I've been playing a lot, as usual. I've had a busy week, but I've managed to squeeze in a little bit of game time.
A little bit of game time. Each night.
When I get home from going out and, you know... Unfortunately, I've had a social week, so I've only... Tonight's been the one night that I've sort of stayed home. Oh, no, I stayed home Monday night. On Sunday, I played through an old DOS game, as usual, called The Catacomb Abyss, which is kind of... It's a first person... It's like a shooter, but you cast magic... You cast spells, and you just run around... It's basically a dungeon crawler in real time. And it's pretty... It's based on the Wolfenstein engine. It's coded up by good old John Carmack. And it's... I believe. And it's good. You know, I enjoyed it. It's pretty simple. It's pretty basic. But you can have a fair bit of fun with it. It had some cool stuff. My favorite thing about it was this really cool thing. You can get a time stop... a time stop thing, which allows you to stop time. And you can run around the level, like, deploying fireballs. And basically set like a million traps, so that, like, when time starts up again, all of the monsters suddenly have all these cool fireballs coming towards them.
Oh, that's cool. So that's kind of like sort of like the time stop in Dishonored, where you could the much advertised sort of. You can shoot a guy with his own bullet or whatever.
Yeah, but I would have liked to see that used a little bit more. Like, it's not very common in the game. I think they could have done some cool stuff with it. But just seeing that in a game from, like, I want to say 92. Was really cool, you know. I'm like, what a cool thing for an old game to have. I love when DOS games have little secrets like that, that, like, you don't expect them to have. I also finally pulled down my copy of Slipstream 5000 and had a play through that. It's a flying racing game, and it's pretty good. It's futuristic, nice graphics, especially the menus. The menus are cool, and it's the difficulty level at the standard difficulty setting is easy enough that you can play through it in one night, but hard enough that it's a challenge to unlock all the levels. And, you know, you'll get some... There was some teeth grinding and some tight races in there, which I really enjoy. So, good. Yeah, it's a good game. You know, if it's not like a normal racing game, because you also have to think about how, like, not just making turns, but also going high, going low, and there's also weapons in there. So it's a good game. I really recommend if you like DOS games and you like racing games... check it out. I know that's pretty niche, but whatever. You know, I've also played through Full Throttle. It was time for my yearly playthrough, because it's been about a year since I played through it. And Full Throttle is fantastic as ever. Go and play it.
Good. What about...
I don't have much more to say about Full Throttle, because I think I've said, like, everything that can be said about it, but just playing it again, like, I've played Full Throttle before. I play it every year now.
Well, Tim Schafer favorited your tweet of the last scene...
Yeah, of so the funeral. Cool. Well, not the last scene, but of the funeral.
Yeah. So that's
and
cool.
Yeah, well, that really didn't mean that much to me, but I mean, it's cool, but I don't really get starstruck.
Fair enough. I do.
But Full Throttle is my favorite adventure game, and playing through it again, I can see why. And I got the last time I played, for some reason I had a hard time getting the cavefish. I think I was trying to hit him when he was looking up, when he lifted his head up, but I think you have to do it when he puts his head down.
Oh.
I forget.
I thought it was when he had to lift his head up.
Yeah, that's what I thought too, but I tried that last time, and I died. So either I got lucky this time, or you actually have to do it when his head's down. And I got it the first try, and I was like, oh, good.
Were you playing it in DOSBox or ScumVM?
No, I play in DOSBox. Anatoly tells me that playing it in ScumVM actually makes the action sequences a bit weird.
Yeah, that's what happened to me last time I played it. I played it in ScumVM, and it took... Usually when I play it, I think I've mentioned this, but usually when I play it, like, the second... On the mine road, the first person you run into is usually, like, the guy with the...
Father Tork.
Well, yeah, but once... After Father Tork, the first person...
Usually one of the...
it's either a Rottweiler or the guy with the...
Usually a Rottweiler.
Yeah, or the guy with the recoil booster.
Sometimes it's the Vulture.
Yeah, the guy with the recoil booster. But usually the third person I would run into was the Vulture, who you have to throw the fertilizer into her eyes, who is basically the key to starting the whole rock-paper-scissor puzzle. And it took like 15 or 20 tries to get her when I played last time, which was... It had never happened to me
telling
before.
Me that.
Yeah. So maybe it is a Scum VM thing. Anyway.
You cannot sit on my laptop, Cat.
So Scum VM programmers, if you're listening, fix that.
Yeah. Or just use DOSBox to play it. It works fine.
Yeah.
So don't stress.
What about Cybermage?
Yeah, last night I finally pulled down my... Oh no, I've also been playing Fields of Glory.
Yeah,
and I play a lot of those games.
I was actually going to bring that up before we had our incident with my laptop. I was going to say, hey, what about Fields of Glory, Monsieur Grand Cool?
Yeah, so I was looking through eBay and I found this old MicroProse strategy title. And I grew up playing MicroProse games, so I'm like, oh, I need this, you know. And it's called Fields of Glory, and it's about... All the you know, you get to basically relive the time of Napoleon's battles, and you know, you can go, there's a couple of made up ones just to get you like started in easy stuff where there's not like 10,000 troops you're trying to control at once.
Uh-huh.
But it's like a tabletop war game made for the computer, and you're basically playing general, and it's real time, which is weird for those sort of games in that era. You know, that's not common. So like I've spent you know, my lunch hours during the week studying like unit formations and writing notes on how to defend against cavalry and how to defend against artillery, and you know, it's nice enough that it's got difficulty levels and you can make it easy. Like I have no idea about playing war games like that, so it's nice to start easy, and then once you've got a hang of it and you're like, oh, I won that quite easily, you can turn the difficulty up and get your butt handed to you. So I've been enjoying that. It's pretty basic, but it does a good job of conveying the feeling of being a general and everything's happening at once, and you've got to move quick and keep your eye on the battlefield, and you zoom in and zoom out, and it's really like so much attention to detail. Like they give you battalion leaders and their histories, and like the book, the manual is basically a history book on that whole era. Is it called the Hundred Days War or something like that?
I forget. I don't remember. Probably.
I don't know. But yeah, so it's nice for me to be able to find a war game like that that's like you can actually get into it, but at the same time is detailed enough that you don't feel it's too simple and it doesn't really represent the period. So that's good.
Hmm.
So it's not... I've talked to a few people about it. I've not found anyone else that's played it before, so it's not very well known,
huh.
I don't believe. And it's nice to find a game like that that you don't hear much about and see if it's good or not and find out that it is enjoyable, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then last night I started playing just a little bit, and I had a good old play of it tonight. Cybermage Dark Light Awakening, which is an origin title. A cyberpunk game, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like a first...
Where you play a half-robot wizard who has an oxymoronic dark light, and he wakes up and says, time to shoot things.
Yeah, you get the story from a comic book in the manual, which is cool. Mm-hmm. I love it when games did that in the 90s. There should be more of that.
Graphic novels.
Yeah.
I love how we're just doing like a half-hearted rehash of everything we already talked about.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but you know, you've said done your banter to me, now you're just going to let me talk about the game.
Okay, but you were talking about it for so long.
I'm sorry.
Give us the abridged version.
Okay, it's basically imagine a cross between Hacks, Strife, and Tech War. Mm-hmm. It's better than Hacks and Tech War, and it's not as good as Strife.
Well, anything is better than Tech War, isn't it?
True.
I mean,
true. The only thing that really annoys me with it is if they'd done it in the build engine, they would have had everything they've got now.
Mm.
Like if they'd licensed the build engine, which can't have cost that much because they got it for Tech War and Witch Ape, they would have had a much better system. It would have been more fun to play. But you know, they did a decent job. Like I'm slowly getting used to it. It's got some cool stuff. Like you can get in a tank and drive around and shoot people. You can get in a flying car and fly around the city, and it's really a cyberpunk game. It's like it makes no bones about how 90s it is, and it's got some weaknesses. It's got some strengths. I'm about halfway, I think. Like I told you before, there's this little message log, because the codes that you get in, like you get these messages in the game where people are like, oh, you have to go here. They give you your objectives and it records the messages for you. And I'm pretty sure the codes to doors that they give you are randomly generated, because they'd be like, oh yeah, the code to the door is 49BD, you know, so it actually records that for you. So I've gotten about half of those messages in my message log. Like I can see the empty slots.
Okay.
So I'm pretty sure I'm about halfway based on that. And yeah, I'm enjoying it, but it's a hard game to recommend because it's really clunky, and it's not like playing Duke Nukem 3D where it's nice to play and it's easy to shoot. It's quite difficult. I'm having a hard time, actually. Like, it's kicking my butt, so... But I'm getting there.
Okay, well, that's good.
So, yes, so that's what I've been playing. What have you been... What have you played?
Oh, what have I played? Finished? What did I finish? I played and finished Planescape Torment.
What's your verdict? And be objective. Don't say it's good just to, like, please me. Be objective.
Are you kidding me? I don't need to please you.
Good. You sound so hurt. I'm pleased.
Okay. Whatever you say.
That's what I like to hear.
Yeah, I enjoyed Planescape Torment. You had told me that it was a hard game to get into, and
it can. Yeah,
yeah. I didn't find it difficult to get into at all, short of my stupidity of not being able to figure out how to get out of the very first room in the mortuary for a while. But once I got the hang of it and I figured out where I was going, I really enjoyed it. And you know, it was an RPG. I played it like an adventure game. There were a couple of bits where the combat were. I mean. The definite strong point, as we talked about, was Sigil. I mean, just the sheer amount of things to do and places to go and stuff were really... It was interesting. It was varied. It was interesting. There were no pointless fetch quests of, like, you know...
Kill 15 goblins or any of that normal RPG stuff.
There were some. There was, like, you know, a couple of things where you, like, go to the office and the guy's like, oh, I'll pay you one copper for every rat tail you bring me. But it was so inconsequential and pointless that, you know, it's not necessary, which is good. I like that. I have to admit, partway through, I kind of lost sight of the main quest and was pretty much struggling for what to do until I finished up some side quests and then by accident found the area that I needed to go to complete the main quest. But once I did that, it just kind of all chugged along and got interesting again.
The last section of the game is fairly streamlined as well.
Well, yeah, there's that too. Once you leave Sigil and get to Cursed, it's pretty much just completely linear. But, I mean, there's some bits where the beginning of that bit isn't very strong. Like, the whole bit in Cursed is kind of, I don't know, very...
I think Cursed is just there to set up the whole thing that comes later.
Pretty much. Really. And then there's a bit later on where, like, all your charisma and stuff goes out the window and you pretty much have to do combat the whole time, which can be a little annoying, but I got past it.
I found it interesting, like, that you got to probably the toughest battle in the game without knowing how to fight. You had no... Like, when I was listening, we were finally, like, discussing it and talking on Skype and you were playing the game and I was listening to you fight and thinking, he has no idea how to fight in this. No. He's never played an Infinity Engine game before. You weren't pausing to give orders. You weren't using your buffs, like, for spells.
Nope.
You weren't using special abilities. You weren't using items in your quick slot. You weren't using anything. And you'd gotten through most of the game doing that, which says a lot about how Torment can be seen as an adventure game.
Yeah, pretty much every single battle I had up to that point. I mean, once I got all my companions, I would just click on the enemies and just they would.
You're playing it like Diablo,
I guess.
which is ridiculous because it's a strategic game. But yeah, it says a lot about how secondary the combat is to the game.
Yeah, even the toughest battle. Like at first, I died a whole bunch of times and I was getting frustrated, but then.
Yes, you were.
I finally beat it in the end, and it wasn't such a bad thing. And then, of course, I died a whole bunch at the end bit too, and that was getting a little frustrating too. But overall, it was really good, and I really liked what it did, and it was really a nice game, and I'm glad that I played it, and I don't think I ever need to play it again.
No. Well, it's a game that it takes a fair bit of time to experience it properly.
Well, plus, I really enjoyed the experience I had with it, and I don't think I need to replicate that. Or there's nothing that I would do differently that I'm curious about that would leave me feeling as satisfied as the first time. So now, having said that, I want to make pleased to make an announcement in that the Blue Cup Tools podcast is now officially renaming itself to the Planescape Torment podcast, and today's topic is going to be Mort, liar or friend? So I think that... No, I'm just kidding.
I approve of everything you just said until the I'm just kidding bit.
You were just... I could hear. Your disappointment was palpable there at the end there. You were just like...
We could...
Hooray!
Could start up a side project.
No.
Like having played my games and knowing how I am as a person, like the sort of stuff that I like, how I like quirky stuff, and I like the sort of offbeat but also serious, but with like a cheeky side to it. Mm-hmm. You can probably see why it's one of my favorite games of all time.
Absolutely, but what gets me too is that you only played it for the first time in like 2008, right?
Yeah, I had a really hard time getting my hands on it, actually. Because, like, before eBay came around,
yeah,
I looked in all the game stores for it, I asked them for it, and it was, like, one of those games you just could not find for a while until they did a re-release.
At that time, it was already 10 years old.
Yeah, that's right. So, I did try quite a lot to find a copy of it before that. Because I'd heard good things about it, and then, you know.
Yeah.
And I played through Baldur's Gate.
The way you go on about it, it makes it sound like you played it when it originally came out.
Why?
I don't know. You just have such love for it that it makes it sound like you know, it's one of those games that you played when it first came out and it changed your view forever stuff.
I think that's a good thing because it means that I'm not inhibited by nostalgia clouding my judgment. Actually viewing the game, you know, way after its time.
Sure.
And still utterly adore it, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I played like Baldur's Gate 2 when it first came out, which is similar in style, mm-hmm. and you know, all that stuff, so I like the style of game anyway.
Also, if you had played it when it first came out, you would have been 12 years old, and I don't think you probably would have appreciated some of the themes.
I don't think I
would have
got it, no.
Yeah, as much as, yeah.
Yeah, so...
Baby.
I
don't mean that in the baby sense. I mean that in the wah wah boo sense.
Yeah, I know. I know. I had no mistaking
good
there.
I just needed to clarify. Yeah,
so I would say the fact that my judgment's not clouded by nostalgia, and I think the writing is still a little bit overdone and a little bit high fantasy, but can like what they did, the concepts they played with, and the, you know, the style they went with compared to most other games.
Well, it's not that high fantasy, because I'm really turned off by high fantasy dialogue. And, I mean, yeah, there was a lot of lore in it and stuff, but it wasn't just lore for the sake of lore, like you said. They used it to an effective degree. And, yeah. I mean, you know, there's a little bit of talk of crap and, like, this place and, oh, I'm from here and this battle of... But, you know, I could forgive it. It was easily forgivable. Good. And I mean, it was really good at building a world, and
it was I think the best thing about it is that because they did on purpose try to make it different to every other fantasy game out there. Mm-hmm. It's not this orcs and elf shit again.
Yeah,
it's,
exactly.
Oh, what's this? I've never seen this before.
Yeah,
you know, not oh, dwarves hate elves. How novel.
Yeah,
how unique.
Exactly.
So instead, yeah, and the cool thing is
Githarai hate Githaroos or whatever they're called.
Githari. Zuga Zuga. But yeah, it's cool because this very week the very first footage of the new Torment game was shown. So it was kind of a timely
thing. It was
thing
good
of doing
timing, yeah.
The funny thing is that the Numenera, or whatever setting it is, mm-hmm. is meant to be some brand new setting for the new game, and watching it, it looks exactly like Planescape.
It's just really...
Yeah,
it is exactly like Planescape, but it's much better animated, and...
Man, the animation was really good. Did you notice that?
I did. I was really impressed by, like, the flapping of one of the characters' capes and how detailed
when they run up the stairs, it looks fluid and they turn the corner. Like, I've never seen... And like an isometric or top-down or whatever it's called RPG look like that ever, and I've played most of them.
I have to say, I'm really not an RPG guy, and playing Planescape Torment, and you telling me, I mean, you've told me that you wouldn't recommend like Baldur's Gate to me because of the whole combat thing. I mean,
you get your ass kicked so quickly.
I probably would, but I mean, like, I mean, I've played Fallout New Vegas and Fallout 3, and I played Ni No Kuni. And, you know, I played Super Mario RPG back when I was in college. And I played Dragon Warrior too. I mean, I also played Dragon Warrior. I didn't play Dragon Warrior 2.
Okay.
But,
thanks for clarifying, because I honestly thought you meant the sequel, the second game.
No, I played the original one. So, I mean, I'm no stranger to RPGs, but I wouldn't call myself an RPG fan. But,
no.
But, despite that, having played Planescape Torment now and seeing Numenera, whatever, I'm actually interested to play it now. So,
oh, good.
So, yeah, good. Planescape has played me. Yeah, I'm actually seriously considering playing Arcanum next, actually, I think going to do another RPG.
The way you're interested in like history and stuff like that, yeah. I think Arcanum is a really good choice for you.
And as I told you before, like, it, you know, just if I were ever to branch away from adventure games, I think the other genre I would be interested in doing would be an RPG.
Because you're interested in character development and writing, and RPGs have all that stuff.
And
most of them have more of it than adventure games, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, and I'm really interested in like, just choices and things.
Oh, dude, you will love Arcanum.
Like, well, I'm talking about, yeah, like the little context choice things that pop up when you talk to someone, and it's like, you know, and being able to do different things based on your abilities and things. And
well, that's role-playing at its core.
Exactly.
Role-playing is not really crawling through a dungeon hitting things with fire instead of a stick because you're a wizard instead of a monk. You know?
I like the idea of being able to talk your way out of something because you have high charisma, and you know, if you have low intelligence, you can be like, darby, dar, dar, dar.
That's Arcanum. Like, as I told you, there's an entire annoying dungeon in Arcanum that I skipped on my last game because I was... But like charismatic enough, you know, I had enough persuasion skills. So, yeah, that's really why I love RPGs. Like Arcanum was actually the game that got me into RPGs. Mm. Before I tried Baldur's Gate and stuff like that, and it never really clicked. After Arcanum, I just had to play them all. Like I just went and got every single one, and like I got to play all the.
Be honest with me, it's because Arcanum had a sheep that you could have sex with, right?
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Thought so.
Is that
so? Moving on.
So, have you started another game since finishing Torment, or have you had a break from gaming for a bit?
Well, I just finished Torment. What, like 2 days ago? We were Skyping when I did.
No, dude, I played through like 3 DOS games this week.
Yeah, but you're a lot more game oriented than I am. I take a while. I know I haven't played any new games actually.
Yeah, but a lot of them don't take that much. A lot of them you can play through. Well, it depends. Yeah. But yeah, okay. No, that's fine.
No, I've been focused on the Scottish game a little bit.
Good. Well, it's coming along.
It is coming along. We had a good thing yesterday. I haven't really decided what I'm going to play next.
We've talked about The Last of Us, but
yeah, we have to do that Last of Us playthrough eventually.
We do, yeah.
But I think that's a weekend project, and our weekends haven't really been lining up lately, so.
I got a couple more weeks of getting ready for the big show that my band's about to play, and my weekend schedule has been ruined again because our drummer's got.
Is that the BNS show?
It is.
The yearly October one. Yes.
Yeah, that's the yearly big show. Mm-hmm. So I'm still getting for that. I'm going to have extra practices now because our drummer got injured, and now we got a replacement drummer.
Yeah.
So it's all yeah.
Well, hey, it'll be. Oh, yeah, if you're busy till then, we can do it around Halloween time. Wouldn't that be appropriate?
Yeah, it would.
Yeah.
I guess.
Anyway, personal stuff aside, stuff we can decide off the podcast.
Okay.
Let's talk about things related to the podcast. And how appropriate that we had a problem with the first recording.
That is really appropriate,
to
actually.
To segue into our topic. And our topic this week is pitfalls of game design. And
not the game. Not the game. Did you like Pitfall?
Oh, yeah, sure. I had Pitfall. I had the original Pitfall on the old Atari when I was a kid. I played the more recent Pitfall, the Mayan Adventure. Yeah, I played it on my Sega Genesis emulator, which I believe you played it in... you played the Windows version or the DOS version?
I did, because that's the version I played as a kid. There is no DOS version of it. It was Windows only.
Oh, okay. Well, that version has, like, a couple of extra levels, if I'm not mistaken.
It does. Yeah. It's got quite a few extra levels.
Yeah, so...
That's a hard game.
Yeah, it is. But I finished it, tough. I remember. It was fun. Yeah, so anyway, we're talking pitfalls of game design, and we'll share some of our own personal horror stories in our experience as game developers, and basically how you can prevent them, and things to consider, and things to look out for, and that sort of thing. So, would you like to go first, or shall I?
You can go because you've had You've had a fairly big one happen.
Yes.
That I think we should cover.
I've had a fairly big one happen to me twice in my time, yeah. And you'd think I would have learned better, but...
Let's talk about a recent thing you did with a demo.
Let us do that, actually.
Let's start off with recent, and then we'll cover stuff.
Yeah, okay. So, one very important lesson that I had to learn the hard way very recently is don't ever delete anything of projects that you do. Because you might think, oh, I finished with this. I don't need this particular source folder anymore. And you go ahead and you delete it. And then, oh, it turns out you actually do. So, I put out... I made a demo of... I didn't put out. I made a... I don't put out on the first date. Okay. I made...
Disappointing, but okay. I'll take it. I'm patient.
Well, it's usually because I'm too drunk. Anyway, I made a demo for A Golden Wake, and I just copied over my game folder, and I stripped it down to its bare essentials, what I needed for the demo, you know, and I compiled it, and I uploaded it to Dropbox, and I thought, okay, that's ready to go. I don't need this extra folder with this stuff in it. I'll just delete it. And so I did. And I thought, all right, that's fine. I got myself covered. I got this demo, whatever. And then Dave asked me to please upload the source code so that Janet could put out and compile a Mac version and a Linux version. And I was like, oh, crap. I deleted my source code. So I spent about 2 days total in vain with file recovery programs trying to recover my deleted files, and unsuccessfully. And each scan of my computer took about 8+ hours. So that was annoying because I couldn't really do anything in the meantime. And in the end, I wasn't able to get them back. So what I had to do was just redo the whole thing. And honestly, it took less time to just redo the whole thing than it did to do the scans that I did.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But the whole problem could have been avoided if I had just said, you know what, let me just put this as a separate folder somewhere else and forget about it.
Yeah. I found, like, a lot of times in the past with my, like, little projects and stuff, I'll be like, I've finished the game, I've uploaded it, it's been out for a month, there's been no bugs. I'm like, oh, I won't need this source anymore, so I get rid of it, you know? I don't need that. And then someone's like, oh, I want to port it to this, I want to do that. It's handy to have it sitting around in case, you know. Another good thing, you want to see how you did something, or, you know, if you forget how you coded something, it's good to have that reference to go back to. So I'd say this, and it's the same for, like, image files. Sometimes I've done, like, stuff for Dave, like I'll make up, you know, a gaming portal will have a thing where they need me to make up, like, you know, a couple of banner images and stuff like that. So I have to split stuff up into layers, and then, you know, it's just busy work, you know, but it takes time. Mm-hmm. And then I'll send that off to Dave, and then I delete the PSD file with all the layers and stuff like that. And then he'll go, oh, yeah, I need it for this as well. And then I have to go, oh, I'm an idiot. I need to chop up these files all over again. So if you save your source code, if you save your source images, later on down the track, you never know when you're going to need them, you know. And not just in commercial games, too. Like, you never know when you're going to want to do something. And I say when you back up all your other files, back up your source code as well.
Yeah, and if it boils down to a question of disk space, consider getting an external hard drive specifically for all your old projects and stuff. I think I'm going to have to end up doing that soon.
I just use an SD card. I just plug an SD card in because they're like 32 gigabytes or 64 gigabytes or whatever they are.
Are they? Well, they're a bit slow, but
I can keep it in my laptop and just take it wherever I go without having to carry it with me.
No, that's true. So, maybe I'll just get an SD card because then I don't have to worry about an extra USB slot.
Yeah.
And they're cheaper than an external hard drive.
Yeah. Like I said, they're a bit slow, but I don't mind that because I like taking it with my laptop when I'm doing stuff.
Yeah.
So, that's for me.
Cool. I have to see if my laptop has an SD slot.
Most of them do.
I don't know about mine. Let me look at it right now. It's on my lap. No, mine does not.
Oh, well, USB thumb drive is pretty... Yeah. You can move them around pretty easily. You know,
oh, yeah, sure. Thumb drives, of course.
There are ways of doing it.
I've got thumb drives, like the Wazoo.
I don't see the point of backing up to an external hard drive when you can get such a much cheaper option, and you can have two of them, you know, for the same price, and they're much more portable.
Sure.
So, that's my thing anyway. Mm. So, yeah, it's basically... Keep hold of your source stuff, because you never know when you're going to edit. I'd say that's a thing we've both come across. And I'll do things like, if I write code, I try and make it portable so I can reuse it in another project, mm-hmm. instead of rewriting the entire thing. So that's handy to have around.
Yeah, definitely. And now that you say that, I've realized I have a USB stick right here, and it's
there you go.
Well, it's 512 megabytes.
It's not very much.
No, it's not. I know I have a couple of gigabyte ones around here somewhere.
When we're on Bogans, I saw an 8 gigabyte one for $1, so I bought it, and that's my new backup one. Yeah, they're not expensive, dude.
No, they really have not. They're really not expensive at all.
So yeah, go into your local electronics store, and you can save yourself a world of nightmares.
Yes.
And just headaches.
Absolutely.
Backing up regularly is really links to another thing that you've gone through.
Yeah, and with services like Dropbox, which are great, but they're also not foolproof.
I know Dave once deleted a month's worth of work accidentally of his own work and had to redo it.
Yeah.
So, because he saved everything to Dropbox, but not to his own computer. He didn't have a double copy.
Yeah, you should always have a double copy.
Yeah, but what about the time you nearly lost Ben Jordan 8?
Oh, don't remind me.
I can hear
me.
It in your voice.
I still cringe. Flashbacks. I still cringe to this day. So there's a story. So, okay. Once upon a time, I was a naive young developer who was working on Ben Jordan 8. And I had been working on Ben Jordan 8 for a really, really long time. Actually, I almost lost Ben Jordan 8 twice.
Wow.
Yeah. So I had been, I don't think I had been backing it up to Dropbox, but one time it was because I was trying to import some sprites to like for a fog effect. If you remember the bit in the cemetery, there's like a foggy thing. And I had been trying a few ways of doing that. In the end, I settled with just like, I think I used one of those, not timeline effects, but the other one.
Particle Illusion?
Yeah, Particle Illusion. I used Particle Illusion, but before that I was trying out like this other plugin, and it was like you had to put in giant sprites and stuff like that.
Is that the one Ryan Timothy did?
It might have been. I don't remember. But anyway, you had to import some big sprites to do that, and AGS has this thing where sometimes the sprite file can get corrupted if you import a lot of big stuff at once. It happened quite a few times on a Golden Wake, but luckily I backed that up regularly. And so that happened with Ben Jordan 8, and my sprite file got corrupted, and my game wouldn't load, and there was no way to fix it short of restoring a backup. And I freaked out because I hadn't backed it up in a while. And so,
I know, because I was talking to you at that time.
Yeah, and so I think I managed to replace the sprite file, the AC sprite file or whatever, and managed to get it back, or I either lost a couple of weeks of work on it or something, but that was the first pitfall, and then I started backing up more regularly.
As you do. It's funny, once you have a crash, you start putting your seatbelt on all
the time. Absolutely, absolutely. But then... But actually, I think that happened afterwards, after this first one.
Because, I think it was. Yeah. I think it was after the first one.
Because the first one was, it was early morning, and there was a light rainstorm outside, and we had a power surge, because back in Miami, we used to have power surges fairly frequently, because it rains.
I get them all the time.
Yeah, it rains there a lot. Knock on wood, I haven't had, I think I've maybe had in the year I've been living here in New York, I've had maybe one power surge.
I had one this morning.
Well, there you go. So usually power surges happen if there's like a storm or something. This was a light rain. There was no reason for this power surge.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
So there was a power surge, and I don't know why what happened, because we'd had countless ones, but I guess this was just the one that broke the straw that broke the camel's back, because my computer would not turn on. It wouldn't boot up. It would turn on, but it wouldn't boot up. So I guess my motherboard fried or something. So I was like,
"It sounds usually that's a motherboard, but it can be hard to tell with the motherboard what it is."
Yeah.
So
motherfucker board is more like it. Anyway, so I I freaked out because I couldn't boot up my my thing. So at that time, I think I still had I had another computer. My mom had her own, my old college computer at the time. So the first thing I did was I opened up my PC and I took out the hard drive and I plugged it into the other one to see if at least the hard drive was still, you know, intact. And thankfully it was. So I was like, there's that bullet dodged for now. But then it became a question of how am I going to get... So I had to buy a new computer, and I stuck, which is the one I'm currently on, actually. And I just I just plugged in my old hard drive and had it as an partition, which I did. And luckily, I was able to save Ben Jordan 8. But that would have been catastrophic if...
Yeah, you were fairly...
I mean, I was practically done with it at the time. So,
I think this is the thing, more than just, like, the loss of the game. When you lose such a big project, it actually kills your motivation to work on games at all.
Oh, my God, it does, yes.
It actually, you're just like, oh, if it's going to be like this, what's the point?
Yeah, it's tantamount, I would say, to, like, a death in the family, basically. There's just that sinking feeling that you get, that you think, like, you know, that's it, it's gone. That's everything's
and also,
gone.
Like, and also, even if you, like, get a thing, like, you're like, of 2 months ago, you've got a backup or whatever, you're still like, oh, man, I just, I can't, I don't want to do all that again. You've made yourself little promises when you develop. You're like, all right, I've done that now. I won't have to do that again.
Yeah,
know? Yeah. And I mean, so, all of a sudden, all those boxes you've ticked, all those milestones you've achieved are now unticked. Yeah. And you have to just do the same shit that you'd already done. And that can be a bit disappointing, you know, a bit disheartening.
Sometimes it can be sort of a blessing in disguise because sometimes you get a chance to do it again and make it better.
Yeah, but you're not choosing to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Instead of having that choice, you've got to do it, you know, which, can be very disheartening. So, basically, all of this stuff can be solved by backups. Do you have... With your, my power strip, I've got a special surge protector power strip because I just know my power is just that
bad.
Yeah,
I used to have one too, but it didn't do anything. It's still...
They don't always work. But mine's been good to me, actually. I've not had a problem since because I had a couple of power supplies. Like, I went through 4 power supplies in one computer and I just said, this is ridiculous. I got to do something.
Yeah.
So I got this and I haven't gone through a power supply since, thankfully. Because I just got... It's a pain.
Yeah.
More than just the pain of having to have a spare one on hand all the time. Mm-hmm. Just pulling it out and putting it in. But yeah, so...
Backing up
is the moral of the story here still.
Back up regularly. Yeah. I had a very similar experience back in the old days when I was doing a certain game, which I will not mention because it's embarrassing. But
I know.
And it would have been no great loss for it to have been lost to time as well. But I was also like right at the end. I was playtesting it actually because I had just like completed it basically, and I was going through the very last section, and all of a sudden my computer started making this weird like rattling noise, and then it just died, and so I had to do the same thing where I had to take out the hard drive and put it into my other computer, and And I was able to salvage it, but I also lost some work on it. And it was just, it was terrible. And I got that sinking feeling of, oh my God, I've been... And I mean, it wasn't that bad, because honestly, I had made the game in like, 2 months or something like that. It wasn't like Ben Jordan that I had spent 4 years on. So, that's the moral
of
the story.
Yeah, but it's still, when you're starting out, when you're new, that feels like a lot of effort.
That's true,
know?
Yeah, it does.
Like, I remember I lost a game, my second ever AGS project, because my first one I made it in 2 weeks, and then my second one I was making, and then I got Tony Hawk's Underground 2.
You got distracted.
And I was playing it, and I'd finished it, and I unlocked the very last level, I unlocked the bonus level, and I went, oh, cool, the bonus level, so I pressed play on the bonus level, and when it loaded up, my hard drive died, and I lost everything. And I say I lost everything, I lost a little bit of work on a game, you know, but at that time, I was like, oh, man, all this stuff I've done, you know, it really put me off making games for a while, because I was like, oh, what's the point, you know? And after that, I'm just like, well, consciously, take backups, you know?
Yeah.
Just, you know that this can happen, computers are not fail-safe, this is... like 5 minutes of your day to upload it to Dropbox as a second thing or have a have a, you know, SD card or a USB stick or whatever, and then you don't have to worry about it. You know, I even back up to Dropbox, like, my source animations, like my .gal files and the stuff.
Wow.
You know, because I just know if I need to edit it, it's so much easier in that form.
Sure, yeah.
So, you know, it's so easy to make a backup, and there's so many different things that can go wrong with a computer.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about some other pitfalls now. I'll do a couple of mine. Okay. Earlier in the year, my I noticed that my old tablet had started, like, the wires had started showing through.
Mm-hmm.
When my first tablet went, because I go through tablets all the time for some reason. I don't know what it is. But when my first one went, I basically had nothing. So I had to get a tablet and order it. And, you know, sit around for a while not doing anything because I didn't have a tablet. So when this one started going, when I saw these wires showing through, I'm like, oh, this tablet's on the brink, you know. And it's been, and the pad that you draw on is basically worn through. You can see the structure underneath it coming through. There's like a hatch diagonal pattern showing. So it's pretty, I guess they get worn out. But yeah, so I'm like, now I'm like, keep spares, you know, keep spares of stuff. If, like, this is my job, so this is what I do every day. I've got to draw, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure you've got spare stuff. Be aware that gear can fail, you know, your mouse can go off. I've had so many computer mouse failures that it's not funny. I've always got a spare mouse. I've got spare keyboard. I've got spare everything. Just know that your equipment is not bulletproof, that it can fail, and, you know, if you rely on it, think about getting a cheap spare so you've got something in the meantime, in the interim.
Yeah, sure. Like, when I moved up here and my monitor got damaged,
yeah,
I had to go out and buy a new one.
It's a pain, and just having, like, especially if you're in a remote location like me where postage can take a while to get here, as you know.
Yes. which reminds me, I should probably think about sending you your birthday gift right around now, huh?
I what's the date?
It's September.
Oh, it's still September. Oh yeah, it'll get here by January if you send it there. But yeah, so for me, just having a backup. I know it's expensive, you know, to have a spare thing, but when you think about, you know, if it's something you do all the time and it's going to hold you up on achieving your goals, it can be worth having a spare thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
My old tablet now is my spare tablet because it still works, but it's like I don't trust it fully. So, you know, if my new one ever breaks, which, you know, cross fingers it won't,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not naive to think that computers are perfect.
Yeah.
I've got a spare. You know, another thing that interested me that happened to you today, I'd sent you back the source for our game that, you know, to look at some stuff, and then I made a suggestion of something that I'd thought about but not put in,
mm-hmm.
and you started trying to do it, and you were having trouble achieving a really, really simple thing.
Yes.
In the code, and you were trying to figure out why it's not working. And I actually got the source on my end and put the same code in because it was one line of code and it worked perfectly for me. And it actually turned out that AGS was saving your code but not actually running it properly when you were testing the game. So sometimes be aware that AGS is very tricky and when you've changed code. And you said it's never happened to
you. It has never happened to me in the 10
it's happened plus to me about
years
four times.
I've used AGS. It has never happened to me once. Which
happened
is weird.
To me about four times. So, yeah, so you had to recompile all your stuff and rebuild all the files and everything like that. And it works fine. But be aware, because it's happened to me, sometimes you think that your code's not working, but it's actually the editor being the engine being unresponsive, which is weird. I don't know why it happens. I wish I could explain it. I wish I didn't. It didn't happen at all, but it does. Another interesting thing which I've found is because I didn't know certain limitations of the engine, like back in version 3. I don't know which version it would have. It would have been 3.02 or something like that. I was trying to make I was trying to do some functions with a dialogue selection box, like where you select your speech options from.
Mm-hmm.
And I could not get this bit of code to work. I was reworking it. I reworked it about 8 different times, going, what have I done wrong? What have I done wrong? And then it turned out that AGS did not support that. And I'd rewritten the same thing 8 different times, all of which did the exact same thing, and then all of which resulted in nothing simply because the engine didn't support that function. So learn your engine before you try and code something that it can't do, you know? It's basically like just if you're trying to do really niche stuff, see if you can find out someone who knows, because a lot of the times it's not listed in the manual. So yeah, I know that a lot of people probably won't have that problem, but I did.
Well, no, you never know. Someone might.
Yeah. Hopefully they end up fixing it for a new version.
Hopefully, but
I know, yeah. CJ's put in custom dialogue controls in version 3.1, I think. Mm. Maybe, I don't know, but I haven't played with that yet.
Aren't we using 3.2?
Yeah, but I haven't needed to use that yet.
Oh, I see.
Like, I haven't needed to build my own dialogue options box yet.
Oh, okay.
Why? We use the standard one now.
Okay.
Fair anyway, enough. so I be aware that sometimes when you think your code's not working, if something logically works out and works fine, sometimes it's not you. Sometimes it's the engine that's at fault.
Yeah.
You know. It's obviously, not you, it's 99% me. Of bugs are going to be you.
Well, yeah.
You know, you've done something wrong. But be aware that it's not always you. That's something like, I've wasted hours and hours trying to get stuff working, thinking it was my fault, and it's not been my fault. So, yeah.
Hmm. Good. Yeah, good. What else? There was something else, but I can't
remember. Another one I did. I wrote, I've done refraction, like refraction of light for glass jars and sure, stuff yeah. like that. I wrote an effect that did this, and the day I did it, I wrote it, and the way I did it relied on direct draw rendering to do it. That was the way I'd done it. It ran too slow if it ran in DirectX, because mm-hmm. I did it quickly, and I was just trying to test out an idea.
Mm-hmm.
And after I'd written it, I sent it to Dave Gilbert, and was like, here, Dave, I've written this, see if it runs. Because I always like to test, you know. I test stuff as much as I can.
Mm-hmm.
And Dave was like, oh, I can't play this. I need to render it, like, in DirectX. It turns out, and I know Dave had a lot of trouble with this, it turns out a lot of Windows 7 computers do not support the direct draw renderer. They took it out, I think. They took out official support for it in Windows 7.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to completely rewrite my code, how it works, so it would run under DirectX, which was a pain, but I was like, oh, I should have done this first. You know, if I'd done my research and realized that the direct draw renderer doesn't always work on Windows 7 computers, I would have just written it the right way the first time.
Mm.
So be aware as much as you can. I think a good way to keep on top of it is just keep up with the tech forums, you know. Keep yeah. on top of problems. So that was another pitfall I had. And I know Dave had tons and tons of tech support issues where he couldn't figure out why games weren't running for people. And all it was is that they just had to change the renderer to DirectX.
Mm-hmm.
Direct3D9, I believe the renderer we use now is.
Hmm. Well, I have a couple of other pitfall things we could talk about, but they're a little bit less technical and a little bit more design-wise.
Yeah, sure. Also
design. To jump into
we can
into
talk
that.
About everything.
Good. And we will, because this is our podcast, and I'm stretching. So
it's our podcast, and we'll cry if we want to.
We'll stretch if we want to. So
yeah.
Here's a couple of pitfalls of game design that you and I have had to deal with recently. And one has to do with world building and plot holes. And I think a very good way to kind of build a solid world or build a solid story is when you have something, just question everything. Just be really, really annoying to yourself and question everything. Like, if you're going to make a story about, you know, some sort of fantasy setting or whatever setting you want, and, you know, something happens, whatever, just ask yourself, you know, like, okay, well, why is this happening? How is this happening? You know, just try and nitpick little plot holes as much as you can so you can just eliminate them and come up with an explanation for them or just design around them or whatever, because, you know, nothing is more game story breaking than a glaring plot hole, and people will find them. I mean,
sure.
You know, so it's good to just be nitpicky about your own things and just kind of figure out what it is that that you need to avoid doing as far as plot holes.
I think it's really important, like, we've talked about this before, but if you're doing a setting that's not contemporary, mm-hmm. really, really, really think about whether it's fictional or historical, think about your setting, research your setting, and be very, very familiar with your setting so you don't do things like, you know, anachronisms in time or, you know, in, you know, putting stuff in the wrong place, people saying the wrong stuff that just sounds wrong, you know, like you recently did a background that you wanted horse-drawn carriages to be on, but you had, you know, an asphalt road with an asphalt street with lines painted on it.
Right.
So, you know, that the two don't go together. Be aware that you've got a, you know, you've got something that's out of place and work to fix that. Work to go, I'm really familiar with my setting. This is how it should be. Otherwise, people are going to go, I can't get into this. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So,
another thing too is as far as designing puzzles and trying to avoid walking deads, it's really easy to come up with situations where you have walking deads, and it's really difficult to come up with situations where you have your bases covered, be it an inventory item that you can miss picking up that you need later on or something like that. That's a very easy pitfall in adventure game design, and we just had an issue with this too. Trying to rework a puzzle so that it, you know, you didn't have too many of a certain item at the end of it. So yeah, you have to think about these things.
You got to sacrifice something in order to get a puzzle just right. Usually, to get a puzzle spot on, you've got to sacrifice something.
Yeah, and you know, if it comes down to an item, for example, that you need later on that you can pick up early, because usually you would do this because you don't want to have the solution to your puzzle right in front of you in the same room. But for example, if there's an item you have to pick up early in the game that doesn't become useful until later in the game, and you can somehow avoid picking up that item and moving on, you need to think about that, and you need to put in either an excuse for the player to get it and not be able to move on until you get it, or... Well, that's basically it, really.
or you can put an additional version of the item later on. I've done the same.
There's like, that too.
You know.
But yeah, you have to be really conscious.
And I've seen other designers do the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never had a super big problem with like people getting to a thing. The one game I worried about it was Piss, because it was all money based, and so I had to put twice. And you can fail a lot of stuff. Like by fail, I mean you can, because I tried to build it so like you can do. You can complete a puzzle well or badly or sort of averagely. I really had to put in twice as much, you know, money as you actually ever needed to earn in the game in order to make it so people wouldn't get to a certain point and have failed every, like, not failed but done badly every single quest and just had not enough money to complete the game.
Yeah.
So if you're doing optional stuff like that, like I was doing there, make sure that you've got way more than you need. So if people do fail constantly, which is rare, but you never know.
Yeah.
You know, especially because in that I wasn't being like, oh, good option to say, bad option to say, that sort of thing.
Sure.
A lot of it was just like, you know,
learn as you play, yeah.
Yeah, so make sure... I was really stressed in that, and the only way I could really get around it when I thought about it was just totally overload it with stuff to do.
Yeah, unfortunately, the more interactive and more complex you make your game, the more open to these sorts of situations you make yourself.
It's so very true.
You have to be very, very conscious of that. But in the end, I think it's more rewarding to have that extra interactivity.
I hope
stuff.
So.
Yeah.
Most games that I play with it, I appreciate.
Yeah.
You know?
So
yeah, there's, I agree
there's,
with that.
Yes, there are also those pitfalls. What else? Don't draw noses like me. That's another pitfall you've had.
We've had an interesting week of learning.
Yes, we have.
Both of us.
Don't draw noses like I used to draw noses. There we go.
So, yeah, you don't draw them like that anymore.
No, I don't. I don't draw them like that anymore.
I haven't heard that song for a long time.
I have, because I played Grand Theft Auto 5.
Oh, okay, I see.
Although I haven't played Grand Theft Auto 5 in a couple of weeks. Well, since I finished
loss.
It. No, not really.
No great loss.
Not really. Not a very grand loss.
All right. One pitfall I really want to talk about.
Is and puns? This
is is designing within your capabilities. And
okay.
You know,
sure.
a lot of a lot of times you get, like, in a game, if you've got a group project, you've got a couple of different people working on it. You'll have, you know, the art person, you'll have the music person, and a lot of times you get a designer and then a coder. And the biggest problem with having a designer that doesn't know how to code is they're not really familiar with the inherent nature of building a game, and therefore they don't really have an idea of what can be done and what can't be done, which can be a very valuable tool because you'll break rules that you didn't know were rules, and so you can come up with more creative stuff. But at the same time, you can come up with stuff that's really, really annoying to implement. I know Dave, when he was doing Puzzle Bots, you know, and I'm sure Vince had the same problem, had, like, someone who wasn't really familiar with coding was suddenly was designing puzzles that were just a nightmare to build, and because there's a lack of understanding of what's easy to do in the engine and what you have to do crazy workarounds for. So if you give yourself the power of knowing how to code something and learning how you can code something, instead of just going, oh, we can design this, like, you asked me one day, can we have it so that the player writes something on the wall, and that message has to be the right message, and then, you know, that solves a puzzle. Now, it's very, very... it's basically impossible for a single person to get a recognizable handwriting simulation at 320 by 200, which is our resolution, and have it work, you know, well, and have it work every time. You know, I know I've used the Nintendo Wii and the Nintendo
DS. Well, here's the thing. If I can interrupt you real quick, just as a sure. as a defense to my honor,
oh, sure.
Monsieur Grand Cool.
That's me.
Yes. This situation's a little different because I have an understanding of coding. So my presentation to you of this was, is it possible to do this, and not, hey, let's do this. So
yeah, but still, when you presented it to me, because I was like, I can see a way that I can do something kind of like this, but I have to totally change the concept entirely.
Yeah,
like,
no, well, that was fine. That was just an idea to springboard off of.
But the point is, if you've got a designer that designs the whole game, you know, and they actually put that in as a puzzle, then all of a sudden your game basically have to cut a puzzle because it's impossible. You know,
of course.
There's no way I could build that in AGS and make it playable for everybody because everyone's got different handwriting, handwriting recognition. You'd have, like, Nintendo can't do it perfectly yet, so how am I in my bedroom going to do it perfectly? You know what I mean? So yeah, it's like, it's knowing your sort of, knowing what you can do in code really gives you the ability to not only go forth with design and, like, design stuff beyond the basic use hat on stick puzzle, but also know, like, this is never going to work. Cut it before I spend 3 days trying to make something that's just too hard to work.
Right.
You know, so I say that the pitfall there is being unfamiliar with a thing and trying to work in it without having really any experience of what you can do and that. And I mean, Puzzle Bots worked out fine because, you know, there were obviously talented people coding on it, but I know it was a lot of work to get going, and you know, if I hadn't have redesigned the puzzle you put to me, I would have basically just said, no, we can't do it.
Mm.
You know, so it's just about having the ability to code. I think even as a designer whose job isn't coding, gives you a greater understanding of what you can and can't do, and therefore you can design more effectively because of it.
So basically what we're saying is be more like us, who have our jack of all trades and know a little bit about everything.
Yeah,
no matter how limited.
It's not about being good at something.
No, it's so just much. Having
it's
understanding.
About having an understanding, you know?
Sure.
Like, if I said to you, oh, okay, let's do a bit in there where the game switches to first person view, you know, and you walk around the room, you know, and in first person and it's real time.
What are we 3D, making Hopkins and, FBI now?
Yeah, and you have jumping puzzles. Let's do that.
Yeah.
You know? Because if you don't know that that's, you know, a pain to do in AGS, you might just design that into the game. You might go, okay, here's a bit where it switches to first person and you jump over boxes.
Sure.
You know, so when you have a knowledge of how to build and what works and that sort of thing, you can go, all right, well, that's not going to work. How can I design differently myself rather than then go, oh, the coder can't do my ideas. He's useless. She's useless. Right. That sort of thing.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
And it's not just coding, but it's all other, you know, you have an understanding of art too.
And everything like that. Yeah.
You have an understanding of how you know, pixel animation works or whatever, and why you shouldn't crop sprite edges and things like that.
Yeah. A lot of the stuff, like, you learn a lot when you start working in a team as well, mm-hmm. you know, like,
indenting code, for Dave, instance. Indenting code, for instance.
Yeah, like today I went through and indented all of your code. I indented a lot of code,
mm-hmm.
you know, and because I care about that. And I honestly, if I see code that's not indented, my mind just shuts down.
Mm.
I just cannot read it. It's like for me reading someone who, you know, has bad grammar and they put random capital letters at the start of words in the middle of their sentences and mm-hmm. that sort of thing. I don't want to read that. Mm. I can't look at it. I'm more turned off by that. It doesn't flow nicely. So I format my code neatly so that
it's
see what they're doing.
It's like those people on the internet that, like, they randomly capitalize letters within the same word too. I hate that.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it in a long time, but yeah, it's that sort of thing.
But yeah, so if you can have your code neat, and also, like, working with a team, and I've told you this about this and stuff, make sure your variable names make sense to both you 6 months later and the person you're going to send it to who might have to fix your code.
Mm, yeah,
that's make it. Sure all your variable names, make sure you everything's, like, in folders, you know? I love having folders, a folder for everything within my AGS project.
Yeah,
because if you've got 5,000 sprites, you don't want them all sitting in the same folder. If you've got to dig through 300 sprites to get a single sprite, you're wasting time.
Yeah.
You wouldn't do that on your desktop. You wouldn't have 3,000 sprites on your desktop just sitting there that you got to sort through bit by bit. You've got them divided up into folders.
I'd have them all in one folder on my desktop.
Well, not anymore. You know, just like, if you're spending more time trying to find something than you are actually building it into the game, you've obviously got an organizational issue.
Mm-hmm.
It takes 2 seconds to make a new folder. It doesn't use up any space. So do it.
Good.
And I'm ranting again. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But let's reel it in a little bit. Let's wrap up.
I really believe that this is important.
Okay, good. It is important. And it is a pitfall to avoid. And we've crossed the swamp over the alligators, and we've succeeded in getting rid of some of these pitfalls, and hopefully people will learn from our mistakes and not make
we've any dodged mistakes. The scorpion.
Yes, exactly.
I hated that scorpion.
Yeah. So yes, thank you for listening to the Blue Cup Tools podcast, episode 55. That was us. I have been Francisco Gonzalez. You can follow me at Grunislav Games on Twitter.
Yes, I'm at Ben_304.
Yes, and...
also on Twitter.
Yes.
That's not some weird new social media thing that you've never heard of. It's Twitter.
Yes, it's Twitter. And you can follow us at BCT_podcast if you want to receive more regular updates. And you can look for us on iTunes, and that's all that sort of thing that you can do, and blah, 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 blah. So,
You can see one half of us live at AdventureX later on this year, don't forget.
Yeah, well, there's still plenty of time, so there'll be plenty of time for me to pimp out my appearance.
To plug it,
yes. We'll have many more podcasts from here to there. So,
I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so. So, yes, we'll see you next week, and...
And as usual, if you've got anything you'd like us to speak about,
any
questions or whatever, let us know.
Yeah, let us
We're
know.
We're here for you.
We are here for you. Or if there's any special guests that you'd like to hear, maybe we can harass them into being on our...
Not David Cage. Don't say him.
No, not David Cage. Yeah.
We could mock him.
I don't think he would appreciate that.
I don't think I care.
Ooh. Mon Dieu.
I'll give him all the strawberry candy, see how he likes it.
Oui, oui. All right.
Bon bon.
Adieu.